Welcome to Rough Drafts, How God Writes His Love in Our Stories, a podcast that explores the faith journeys of our friends and neighbors in Burns, Tennessee. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this podcast, we'll hear powerful and inspiring stories of how God works in the ordinary lives of people like you and me. Our stories are unfinished and perfectly imperfect. They are just rough drafts, a glimpse of what is to come because God is still at work, writing plot twists, introducing new characters, and bringing good even from the most challenging circumstances. Join us as we see what God is up to in our stories. Here's your host, Matthew Hyatt.
Well, friends, thanks for joining us again. Today we get to hear from someone who is my kind of people because I hear he occasionally has a dark sense of humor, and he is an IT nerd. That's just all I'm going to say for the intro on this one. He is one of our newest faces over at Burns. Chase Lewis, welcome.
Hi.
How's it going?
Going good.
I have no clue what we're going to talk about today. Do you?
Only slightly.
Okay. Well, as long as one of us has something, we should be all right. So you're in the IT world. You do?
I am in the IT world. I do mobile development is primarily what I focus on, but I've done web development and just almost anything you can do with computers.
Okay. And your family, tell us about your family.
Sarah and I have been, is my wife. We've been married for coming up on 10 years, and then we've got one son who is 8. So we are just as crazy about each other, if not more so, than we were when we got married.
We got to make this a Valentine's Day episode. Well, how long have you been in Dixon?
I moved up here in 2012 and started working for the electric department.
Okay, where are you from originally?
I always tell folks around here Huntsville because that's just the easiest thing. They always know that one.
Yeah. You go to the Big Rocket or where the Big Rocket used to be.
Exactly.
That's really sad they took that down.
I didn't know they had taken it down, so that's news to me.
I'm sorry to break your heart. Evidently, they didn't, you know, design it to last on the interstate for 50 years and like parts were falling off. And
yeah, that could be bad.
That takes all the fun out of it. Well, Chase, what's your God story?
So my family and I had always grown up going to church, and we had essentially just spent, you know, every time the doors were open, we were there, and we'll fast forward a good bit. So I found out that I had a disease called lupus in 2011, and didn't think a whole lot about it. Like it caused some pretty good issues originally when I found out.
Wasn't lupus what it always was on House? Did you watch House?
If my wife did, and she told me she thought it was a joke when I told her that I had lupus, because like I sat her down while we were dating, I was like, "Hey, I've got this thing. It could be a big deal, but probably not." And she just started laughing when she was like, when I said it was lupus, and I was like, "What? Like, what's so funny?" And she said, "Well, I used to watch House, and everything that they couldn't figure out, they just always said, oh, it must be lupus."
Yeah. That's what I think of every time I hear it now because I'm watching House. But it wasn't a joke.
It was not a joke. It was serious.
Yeah.
Honestly, at the time, it wasn't a big deal. It didn't cause me a ton of issues after we got it under control initially. When I first found out that I had it, it acted up kind of like poison ivy. Hmm. So like my skin was real itchy. And a couple of weeks or months later after that, it got a lot worse. I started getting these big blisters all over. It was very itchy and it was not fun. But after that, we got it under control and hadn't had a problem since.
Yeah.
And that was 2011 when I found out. And then Sarah and I ended up getting married and had a great life together, had our son.
Yeah.
And then it started hitting pretty hard. I had a lot of sicknesses and the doctors couldn't figure out what was going on. At one point, my resting heart rate had jumped up to like 120 beats per minute.
Oh, good grief.
And the doctors had said, well, we think this is probably your new normal because we can't find anything wrong. Like there's no abnormalities. Everything else looks fine.
You're like, I've got an abnormality. It's called 120 beats per minute. Were you like exhausted all the time?
I was very exhausted. That only luckily only lasted for about a month.
Okay. A month though.
Yes. At some point I guess it just went, I don't really remember about the time, like around the time, much around the time when I was paralyzed. But one night we were in the hospital just because I'd gotten seriously dehydrated and I'd had a problem just because I kept getting sick and nobody could figure it out. So we were in and out of the hospital. And one night we had gone in there and they had gotten us a room at about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Of course.
And so I ended up getting to bed at about 3 that morning and woke up sometime before lunch. And I walked around and I told Sarah, I was like, hey, my back doesn't feel great. Like it's kind of hurting. And so I got up and moved around and tried to work it out. And finally about 4 o'clock, it had grown from, hey, it's kind of hurting. It doesn't feel right. Maybe I slept on it funny.
Yeah.
All the way to, I've got to get back in the bed. Like, this is extremely painful.
Mm.
And by 6:30, I was in unbearable pain. So like 2 hours had passed, unbearable pain, shaking uncontrollably. And they were trying to draw blood to see if they could figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
And the poor lady that was doing it, she was like, now you got to hold still. And I said, I'm sorry. I'm holding as still as I can be.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And they ended up giving me a few different painkillers to try to help ease the pain.
Yeah.
And finally they just knocked me out and rolled me out of the room. And that was the last thing I remember for a week.
Oh, wow.
I woke up in the ICU, and couldn't move my legs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot to process there.
Yes.
I mean, 'cause you know, you're dealing with, I hate to say normal, but stuff you've been dealing with.
Yep.
You have pain. You get the night-night shot.
Yep.
And then a week later, you wake up in another universe.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not being dramatic, I don't think.
No, that's exactly what happened.
So do they know what happened? Did the lupus just go nuts or?
Initially, no. And like I said, I don't remember anything for a week, even though I remember a couple times having friends in the room and family in the room. I don't remember anything about the conversations. I've talked to Sarah about it, and I was like, hey, how long were so-and-so over here? And she was like, oh, they were probably over here for a few hours. And I was like, I only remember about 30 seconds of them being here.
Wow.
But yeah, initially, Sarah had told me that initially they didn't really know what was going on. And so they did tons of scans, tons of blood work, tons of like all the tests that they could possibly do to figure it out. They ended up realizing that lupus, which what it is all the white blood cells in your body don't know what's good and what's bad.
Okay.
And so it just decided that it like going to attack my spine. And that was it. So it swelled. It caused swelling in my spine in one particular spot. And it swelled up so much that it cut the communication off from the brain down to the lower half of my body. And ended up, after the swelling went down, it left a bunch of scar tissue. And that process they had called transverse myelitis. And they said that some folks get partial movement back or partial feeling back. Some folks heal all the way up and some folks don't. And I was one of the lucky ones that gets to have his chair everywhere he goes now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter where I go, I've always got a seat.
Well, that's maybe the most positive way a person could look at that. Can I ask? So since I've known you, you have been funny and you have been positive and you smile. How do you do that? And has it been that way the whole time? Or like, just walk me through what this was like to experience.
Honestly, it was really hard at first.
Yeah.
And by at first, I'm not normal.
Okay.
So I was in Vanderbilt completely unconscious for a week. Don't remember the whole thing. And then they had kept me for another week. And at some point during that week, I was doing like the second week, I was awake and conscious and I can remember that part. And so I was doing a lot of praying and a lot of asking and trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
And finally one night I woke up in the middle of the night and I realized I'm not in control.
Hmm.
And that was a big thing for me because I had, throughout my whole life, thought, I'm in control of what happens. I'm in control of the outcomes of things, and I have influence over that. And waking up with this feeling of, I'm not in control, and that's okay, because God is in control. I don't have to worry about, you know, how my career is going to turn out. I don't have to worry about necessarily. I mean, obviously a little bit you do, but like how much money you have and what all is going to happen. Like God worries about those things and he takes care of us.
Yeah.
Not to say that we don't have to do our part and have input.
Well, right. Like, yeah, I don't hear you as a fatalist. You
know, exactly.
You're not just giving up on the universe. Okay, I'm just going to be the devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
I know you said that's not normal.
No.
And it's not. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. I wish everybody... Okay, I'm rambling. One cool thing about ministry is you get to be with people in the best times and the worst times, and you see how people handle those. And it's really cool to be around people who handle hard things well, because that makes it easier to handle life's normal hard things better.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I when I say that, I'm thinking about Nita Woodson. I don't know if you ever knew her. She's been gone a few years now. And, you know, as she's dying, you go to check on her and she tells you how she's praying for you.
Yeah.
Well, this is backwards, woman. Like, you know, this is not how this should, but she lived so well and she died so well, it kind of made it a little bit easier to be like, you know, maybe I'm not going to whine about having to do my taxes this weekend. You know, kind of perspective. Do you feel like you were that way your whole life, or was this learned through this time?
Honestly, I don't think it was like this one, like instant change moment.
Yeah.
I had dealt with a lot of hard things through life. Like I had some learning disabilities growing up that I'd figured out when I was very young, thanks to good parents.
Yeah.
Like they noticed and they saw and they tried to get me some help. And so like I had dealt with that. And when I found out I had lupus, you know, back years before, it was really funny because the doctor came in and we had gone to specialist in the town I grew up in and in the larger city. And then we got all the way up to Nashville. And then they were like, okay, this is the thing. Like you have lupus. And so the doctor had told me that. And just from all the other smaller hard things through life, whenever she said that, I said, okay,
yeah.
What now? And she, like her jaw dropped open because that's not the normal response when you tell somebody, hey, you've got a possibly life-altering problem here. And it was really, like, I thought it was kind of funny to just watch her face and just her jaw dropped and she didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
Because that's not how most people act.
No, but I mean, what a simple, beautiful thing to say, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, what, I can't admit how many times I've had to watch the movie Frozen because of the age of our kids, but when Frozen 2 came out, there's that song in it, just do the next right thing.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many times I thought about that as just a really good mantra for life. You know, I don't have to have everything figured out, but probably the best thing for me to do is whatever the next right thing is. Again, easier said than done.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool. So this is a big event, and it affects your family, affects parenting. I mean, walk me through that.
It was hard. Honestly, Sarah is an amazing woman. She started taking care of everything else so that I could focus on just getting better, getting more back to normal. And because of that, like she was quietly taking on all the stress and I didn't know for a long time, several months.
Yeah.
And it finally came to a point where she just couldn't hold anymore. And I honestly didn't see it because she held it so well.
Yeah.
And it caused marriage problems.
Yeah.
Like just being completely transparent.
Yeah.
We dealt with a lot of stuff. like luckily the church that we were going to at the time, they were great and they helped walk with us. We had really good friends who would come over to our house and talk to us like even individually and just say, hey, what's going on? Like, I see you're having a hard time in this area or that area. Like, what can I do to help? Mm-hmm. Like, even if it's just, let me just sit here and talk.
Yeah.
And so it was great. Through all of our friends and our church and just the grace of God, honestly.
Yeah.
We were able to hang in there and stay together.
It's amazing how much of a difference just a friend who shows up and speaks life and does good. You know, that it sounds so simple. The story I always tell is when we came home from the hospital with our firstborn son, and John Gabriel had mowed our grass. You know, grass is not a life or death thing. If it got too tall, it was going to get too tall.
Yeah.
But it was one less thing I had to think about when I got home. And that was just kind of a definition of a thoughtful gift. I mean, I can't be nice to John in recordings like this, but you know, stuff like that is really huge. What do you think God has been doing through this in your story?
Honestly, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. I like that answer because yeah. People who tell me they know exactly what God's doing scare me. You know,
I can see a few threads, but I have no idea how they all fit together.
Okay.
Honestly, the biggest thing is I get to tell other folks about God. Like it's a window into the world that I get to live into.
Yeah.
And so it opens the conversation of hey, when you pray, do you actually wait for answers? Do you feel like you're always in control? Even in the hard things in life, do you bring those to God? Or is it just, man, I would really love to win the lottery.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the little things like that. It's like bringing everything to him.
Is prayer wish fulfillment or is it relationship?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a good thought.
Yeah.
That's a really good thought. Do people ask you questions or do they make comments? What does that look like?
Folks always ask, like they're always curious. Yeah. And I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I've been told by my leaders at work, you have no walls, and that can be a really good thing.
Yeah. Well, I think we have so many walls just in society in general, and it seems like the world does a whole lot better when we knock more of those down. That's one of the reasons we do this podcast.
Yeah. You know?
The first person who came on here and talked about mental health struggles, the number of phone calls and texts I got that said, I never knew, I can't wait to get to talk to him because now I know I'm not alone. I'm like, oh, this is better than anything I've ever done in the pulpit because somebody else took down a wall.
Yeah.
You know? So life is different from the vantage of having your own chair.
Yeah.
How does that change your perspective on daily life?
There's good and bad. I mean, like there is to anything else.
Yeah.
The great part is, for example, the folks that know about it and think about it, because a lot of folks just honestly don't think about it.
Yeah.
And that's not right or wrong. That's not on their forefront of mind.
Right.
But it is on mine. So.
Well, like you only think about what you've experienced.
Exactly.
And I've been on crutches for a day or two, and then I decided I was probably going to break my neck if I stayed on crutches. I was just going to not walk, you know? So exactly. I have never lived a life where I had to be cognizant of whether or not there was a curb in front of the business I wanted to go into.
Yep. That is honestly one of the bigger things. That and finding a restroom is way more difficult.
Yeah.
In fact, like we did some stuff with work this weekend.
Yeah.
And it was out at a barn of one of the guys that is in charge of the business, and they had a bunch of gravel out there and they were doing some drills and some trainings. And so, not IT related, it was a separate topic. And so,
I was kind of wondering about the IT drills.
Yeah.
I mean, like, are y'all trying to see how quick you can terminate RJ45s, you know?
Not quite.
Yeah.
But so there was a bunch of gravel out in the lot, and the guy that was running the training was super great. He was like, hey, so we're going to do this. He's like, Chase, I want you to be safe. So if you don't mind, like, you can sit this one out. He's like, and it didn't bother me because I knew he had my best interest at heart.
Yeah.
But yeah, like going into a business, if we're going to a place where we've never been, we'll get on Google Maps or Google Street View and see, like, is there a curb? Is there a ramp? I've got a little portable ramp that I always keep in my car just in case. And so I think, well, that's two steps. Maybe we can lay the ramp down and maybe that's good enough as long as they're like normal size steps, because not all steps are the same height.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's little stuff like that. Like before, my favorite thing to do was hike. And so I would go anywhere and everywhere I could possibly go to go hiking.
Yeah.
And now a curb can stop me dead in my tracks.
That's tough.
It is.
So one of my best friends is a guy named Matt. And in 2012, I think it was, he had borrowed my motorcycle. And there's an accident on the back roads. Just a crazy thing. And one vertebrae kind of went splody. And did a number on his spinal cord, and he called me from the ER because my number is a really easy to memorize number. It's a numerical palindrome, same forwards as backwards.
Okay.
So I was a phone number that he could remember. And he called me from the ER. He said, "Matt, man, I crashed your bike." And he was high as a kite because they had gotten him on
everything.
Yeah. And I'm like, man, that's not funny. Like, come on, you can do better. If you're going to pull a prank, do better than that. I argued with him long enough. They had to put the trauma nurse on the line with me because I really thought he was messing with me. And he has been in a chair ever since. And just the number of things that I had not ever dreamt of how much more complicated life was.
Yep.
And it made me not take my mobility for granted nearly as much. I'm sure I still do, but... So let me try this angle. I think sometimes people are scared to talk about a disability with people because they're scared they're going to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. Have you had experience with that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
There's always folks that will approach it very cautiously.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "Hey, is it okay? Like, would it be possible? Maybe sort of some way, somehow, like, could you talk to me about this thing?"
Yeah.
And like, I'll let them get it out eventually.
You just sit and watch and wait, see how long it takes.
Exactly. Cause it doesn't bother me a bit. And like, and other folks may not be that way, but like, it doesn't bother me.
What do you wish people knew?
Parking is also a really big issue.
Okay. Yeah. Talk about this.
So handicapped spots are a big thing, especially. So I drive a van and it's got a door with a ramp that comes out the side. And if somebody parks in the hash marks, even if it's like halfway through, because like this actually happened at lunch today when we went out to lunch with friends, somebody parked halfway through the hash marks because they were in a large truck and they didn't do a great job getting it between the lines.
Yeah.
That happens. I know. I used to drive a bigger truck.
Yeah.
And instead of straightening it up, they just kind of left it. Well, I did the best I could, but I still had to scoot up against like the back of my wheelchair up against the side door of the car, even though it was halfway through the hash marks. Like, I still need the space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, there's been a few times where it's been like somebody will park so close that I've had to go back into a business and just talk to folks and be like, "Hey, do you know who owns the XYZ car out there? Do you know who owns the XYZ car? Oh yeah, that's John. He's back here. Let me go get him."
Yeah.
And have him come out and move the car, which I'm sure makes the person feel real bad for a minute, but
yeah.
Also, like, it, you know, again, it stops me in my tracks and I have to go find somebody to move a car.
Yeah. And I mean, what would have been 15 seconds for me became a 5-minute excursion, assuming whoever wasn't in the bathroom or, you know, drunk or whatever it was, in the, you know, assuming they didn't miss it.
So, exactly.
Man. Yeah. Life is different.
Yeah.
Life is different. So, what do you think your boy is learning from your experience?
Hopefully all the good things and none of the bad things.
Fair. I mean, of course, that's what we all want for our kids. But do you think it's affecting how he sees disabilities, or do you think it affects how he sees, you know, what do you think the impact is?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Okay.
I hope one of the things that he gets out of it is that he sees me doing the hard things. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that they had told me, because I went and did physical therapy for a couple months after I was paralyzed to be able to get back to doing life every day.
Yeah.
The therapist at the place where we were going were amazing, but they also had folks there that were way off, like were way worse off than I was. And that was one of the conversations they had. They were like, "Hey, you know, you're handicapped now, like you're disabled. Do you want to get on disability? Like, we've got folks here that can help you get that set up."
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at him sideways and I was like, "Why would I go on disability? Like, I can still work."
Yeah.
And so I like, that's one of the things that I want Samuel to see is, yes, life is really hard, but it's not stopping me. Like, just because something's hard doesn't mean you just give up.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a lesson that I think is lost on a lot of people, even just in the mundane, you know. Oh, the math problem was hard. I'm not going to try anymore.
Yeah.
You know, let's dig into hard. John Piper, the Baptist minister, Minneapolis, I can't remember where, desiring God is his big thing. He had a book called Do Hard Things. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of a neat neat call for the church to not be afraid of, let's stretch ourselves, let's trust that God's power is going to be what gets us through it. But let's not set the bar so low for ourselves that we trip over it. Let's let's strive for excellence. And that's kind of a hard thing for churches to get their heads around sometimes, I think, you know.
Yeah.
We want to say, come unto me all you are weary, which is a really biblical thing, but then we don't take the next step and say, you're with Jesus, now let's see where we can go from here.
Yeah.
So one of the first things you talked about was kind of the illusion of control of our lives. I want to come back to that for a couple of minutes. Mm. It really is easy to think that we can control the universe, isn't it?
Way easier than most people think.
Yeah. Why do you think that's so attractive to us to want to be in charge?
Honestly, I would argue that it even goes all the way back to the garden, because that was one of the things that the snake was tempting Eve with, yeah. Was that, hey, you could be like God. You could be wise. You could know the difference between right and wrong. Mm-hmm. Basically, you could be in charge of what is okay and what is not.
Yeah.
And I think that's just something that's really easy for us as people to fall into. Like, we're selfish by nature. We like the things that are good for us, and it doesn't really matter if it hurts somebody else.
Yeah.
But...
well, I'm in a hurry. I'm going to park in the hash marks.
Yeah.
Who cares? It probably doesn't matter. I know that's not what you said, but it's an example yeah. of our low-key selfishness day in, day out.
And like I've seen delivery drivers do it too, and their reasoning is, well, I'm only going to be in there for just a few seconds and then I'll be right back out.
Yeah.
But that few seconds may be when I'm trying to drive through the parking lot to figure out where there's a spot and now there's not, because not only did you park all the way in the middle of the hash marks because you didn't want to take up a spot,
yeah,
but now I can't even park there because there's a car in the hash marks and I don't know that you're coming in for 10 seconds.
Yeah, there's not a sign on the car that says, exactly, I'll be back in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And even if there is, I mean, you're going to be in there in 10 minutes because everything's slow now.
That's right.
What's funny, I think you're right about the control thing going back to the garden. In every way, logically, I look at it, it feels dumb how much I want to try to control the universe.
Yep.
It's so much easier if God controls it.
Yeah.
It's a burden off my shoulders. It's less work for me. Yet I keep clinging to it. I guess I wish I understood why our desire to be in charge of the universe is so high, you know?
Yeah. I guess one of the best things that going through the life that I've had has given me is a genuine longing for heaven. Mm. You know, we always sing, this world is not my home, I'm just passing through.
Yeah.
And we always say that we're supposed to be looking forward to heaven. Honestly, before this, I wasn't.
Yeah,
I genuinely felt like I had a great life.
Yeah,
like I had a beautiful wife, had a great kid, life was amazing.
Yeah,
and after all this stuff happened, like going through the marriage troubles, going through the struggling with, you know, being in this new life, that was one of the most freeing things. Like I would cry out to God and be like, "Why am I still here?
Yeah.
Like, what is the purpose of having to go through all this?" And the best purpose that I can figure out from it is this is really not home. Like this is a genuine temporary thing.
Yeah.
And it's gotten me so excited that every time I get sick now, I'm like, yep, I'm one step closer. I'm going home. And then I get better and I'm like, oh man, I'm so close. So,
just out of curiosity, does your wife appreciate when you say that every time you get a cold?
She does not.
Because that is usually how that goes, right?
Yes.
And I mean, look, you're not suicidal. You're not fatalistic again.
Exactly.
But there's something about a hunger for what's next that I think is missing in modern day Christianity. Everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to go now.
Yep.
Al and Marcia Griffin were a couple who come here who I just love their perspective on it. He kind of says, I'm just not going to get too excited, but I'm ready to get out of here. I wish they'd quit putting it off, you know? And some of the people I know who are the most joys to be around on earth have that same perspective. So I think that's pretty significant.
It was funny. I had made a friend of one of the guys at work on a different team, and over time, I ended up being on the same team as him and getting to work with him. And honestly, like, I talk about dying a lot more than most folks, just because I've been very close several times.
Yeah.
And because I have that longing for heaven, like, it's not a secret. If you spend a whole lot of time around me, you'll probably hear me say something like, man, you know, it's going to be great. or something, you know, something along those lines. And he pulled me aside one day and he said, so you talk about dying a lot. I was like, yeah. He's like, do I need to be worried?
Oh, wow.
It's like, are you okay? Like, are you going to have any suicidal thoughts or anything like that? And I was like, no. And I, like, that was another door opener of being like, this is why I'm excited. Like, this is what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
And he realized that, oh, wait, that's how I need to be too.
Yeah, this is not depression.
Yeah.
This is anticipation.
Exactly.
What is it in Peter? It says, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of the Lord, something to that effect.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool line.
Yeah.
That's a pretty cool line. Well, Chase, man, is there anything else you want to share with us today?
Not that I can think of. I think we covered pretty much everything.
Well, this has been cool. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and giving us just a look through your lens and a reminder not to park in the hash marks. So, you know, if nothing else, you got that from today's podcast. Well, friends, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for sharing this with a friend. And until next time, I can't wait to hear what God's up to in your story.
Thanks for listening to Rough Drafts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, help us spread the word by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, let's keep looking for how God writes His love into our stories.
Okay, you made it through the credits. So this is like a Marvel movie. There's one last thing. Chase, you said that sometimes kids have a question for you.
Yes. So often I will be asked, especially by children, what caused me to be paralyzed? My favorite response is to always tell them the truth, that I didn't eat vegetables when I was a kid.
Oh, no. So if you want, go play this clip for your children and say, this is what could happen to you. Nothing like a cautionary tale. Anything else?
That's all.
Have a good day.